Oh, I want y'all to understand the potency of your ministry. I want you to understand that what potency means is you take a little bit and it goes a long way. Right now, there are things going on in Chatsworth, Georgia, and Dalton, Georgia, that are just remarkable. Remarkable. And this is supposed to be a part of that. The only Bible that seeps oil in the world lives in this town. And that's the ministry that Jamie and I are part of, doing worship. But I'm going to start from the beginning, and then we'll make it back here. Like a transformer. My dad was a Methodist pastor. His name was Charles McDonald. And And mom was a teacher. I have a sister named Myra Beth. She's 27 now. I'm 30. And I have not been back here in 20 years for many reasons. But when I was a kid, we moved a lot. We moved about every 3-4 years, something like that, with the church. Dad was down in... We were in Warm Springs, then we went to Marietta. Then we moved here, and then eventually after that, we went to Calhoun. And so when we went, I'll just start from Marietta. We went from there, and we moved up here, kind of culture shock, but I loved it. And I've made some incredible friends. There was something different here than any of the other churches that we were at before. But there was a lot of things going on that people didn't know about. I was being sexually molested while I was at this church, not in this church, but somebody else. And it went on for about 4 years, and it was a very dark, dark time. But little did I know that God was doing things behind the scenes that I didn't know of as a kid. You see, I would come here. There was a time when you could not get in that youth room. Let me tell you something. There was a time when there was people hanging out outside the doors, that it was flourishing through the schools, that kids were talking about the next thing on Wednesday and Sunday, the events, the ski trips, all that. It was the potency of the ministry. Love and deep. Not so much wide, but love deep. That's how Jesus did it. 12 disciples. Smart. If you're going to fill up a cup, it's got to hit the bottom of that cup, go deep before it can come to the top, spread wide, right? Jesus knew that. He talks a lot about vessels. So I had that here. While all this stuff was going on over here, the trauma, I would come here and I would find a peace. I found friendship. I found a meaning, a purpose. A something other than what was going on over here. The youth made me feel a part of, that I had a home to go to. I had some good mentors. So I'm sitting in this room right now. I pretty much live the story of a prodigal son where... What happened next is we had to move to Calhoun. And as a kid, that was detrimental to me because it took what I loved. It took the youth. It took my friends. It took all the people I was close to. It took the one thing that took me away from the sexual abuse. And when you start touching with trauma, you're messing with fire in somebody's life. Later, the bottle became my church. We moved right there. When we packed up, when we left, I realized now my trust with God stopped in this church. Whew. Not because of this church, but I thought, well, if God's just going to keep on taking everything away from me, why am I going to be around Him? You know, I blamed it all on that. God this, God that. We went over there. I never fit in. I never felt like I fit in. I just did not... I always felt like I was close to there, and even when I was hanging out with people, I just did not have quite what they had. And got over there and trying to make friends. It was just really hard. And the church wasn't the same. The youth wasn't the same. And when I got there, I did make a friend who actually I think he felt a lot like I did. Didn't fit quite in. He went to his grandmother's house and stole a bottle of her rum, brought it over, and we were just going to be big kids. We were going to be grown-ups for a night. And I knew right then I was not like your average kid, because we didn't have a swig. We poured two solo cups apiece and drank the whole thing. It fazed us a lot, but we went walking around town, threw up that morning, and wanted to do it again. Does that make any sense? Not really. But I didn't for years later, and I went to a party. I remember going to this party where the great parents were drinking there with the kids. And you can do that by law in the state of Georgia. Great law, I guess. But so we go, and they just party with the adults. I remembered what I felt. It's like the stars had aligned, like I fit in all at one time. And I did it again, but it didn't stop there. Then it became an obsession. It became, how am I going to get this? How am I going to feel good from now on out? But it only happens when I put this liquid in my body. It just seemed to come natural. I learned how to make fake IDs. So I wouldn't sell them in town. I'd sell them in Athens, and I would keep my own fake ID, charge everybody else for the alcohol, make a profit so I could just keep replenishing this thing, you know. But by 17 years old, I'd look back and I'd say I was drinking alcoholically and dangerously and lethally. I don't know how many trips to the hospital I've had, how many car wrecks I've had. I don't know how forklift forks stuck in my head. But went to college. That didn't work out. Hated it. They suspended me, which meant, great, I got a whole summer to drink. And I did. And at that time, it wasn't really that bad, but then it got to be where I was isolating. I haven't told this in the first service, but one of the things that actually crippled me the most, all that stuff from my childhood used to happen a lot at my grandparents' house. So when my family didn't know what to do with me, they said, well, we're going to have to move you down with grandparents' house. And they moved me in the same room that it happened in. And then that didn't work. They moved me from my grandparents' to my aunt and uncle's house into that guy's room. It started to get suicidal. I was living literally in a prison of my thoughts and in a room. And it didn't work. Moved in with my dad, got another DUI. I had three DUIs by the time I was 21 years old. By the time I was able to buy liquor, I had three DUIs. And at that time, I was just so rebellious, I enjoyed running from the law. So I was to tell the truth about it. Got out, had 5 years sobriety, really doing good. But I still hadn't done one thing in my life. I went to work at Mount Bethel United Methodist Church in Marietta, Georgia with Randy Meichler. I was working underneath him. John Ponders, who was with this church, he was also working with me. And I did that going to seminary school, not really because I wanted to be so much a preacher. Well, I take that back. I wanted to ride on my dad's shirt tail and get there without having to do anything. And I also wanted to learn about me and how to control everybody else and make them look, get in my world. Really, I was just trying to figure out how I can manipulate people. Because I didn't know how to fix myself. Hated seminary, didn't fit in there either. But later went on, some pretty cool things happened with music. I started playing music. I started doing some stuff for Turner Broadcasting and commercials. And then I started doing traveling a little bit, playing at different places. And I always played music, but eventually the drinking hit me again, but worse. You know, the addiction is always out there doing push-ups. It's not like it gets weaker with time. But by the way, the devil has great patience, just as much as God, because they both know where they're going. They don't care about your clean time. What matters is today. I relapsed so hard. I was drinking so much that I couldn't function in the morning. So then I had to buy, it just went on to pills, and then it went to Adderall. Then it went to buying pills from cancer patients that you use when people are dying so I wouldn't feel my body the next morning, just to maintain. It became about a 500 a week habit. And I moved to Calhoun one last time and thought, you know what, God, this is the last time I'm going to try to get sober. This is the last time I'm doing any of this. And did good for about 2 months. Boom, did it again. Except this time I woke up on the bathroom floor and I had blacked out and go in the shower, and I woke up looking in the mirror and I thought, if I black out again, I'm not going to wake up. And called some people on my phone. Nobody's up at 3:30 in the morning except for one guy who's a Methodist pastor down in Calhoun. And he came over about 7 minutes after that and stayed and prayed for about 13 hours. He also had this oil from that Bible. And after that, I went to detox. And he took me to this Christian gift shop. He said, I need to run in and I need to grab a gift. I'm thinking, it's a complete setup. I look back, but I'm glad he did it. Because went in there and I remember hitting the door and something was different. There was a presence there, but I also had anxiety. And I did. The further I went to the back of this room, the stronger it got. And here's all these people praying in this prayer room. And I'm thinking, okay, gift shop has a prayer room. And really kind of scattered too, coming off of so much stuff. But went in there. They sat me down and they prayed. I bet you there were 35 people in a prayer chain coming out of this little room. Something was lifted. And I feel like I have to tell this. I was delivered from the drinking, but I was not quite set free yet. See, there's a difference between being delivered from something and set free. I hear people from churches all the time, they say, well, I was delivered. I'm delivered. Delivered is taking off the chain off your foot. Set free is walking out of the prison. So there were still a lot of things God had to do. The desire to drink was gone, but I still had scars to heal. And I went to Providence Ministries, and I just absolutely poured everything into my Bible. Woke up with it. Went to bed with it. I started talking to people. I started getting honest with myself. About 2 months later, Jesus is just wearing me out. I mean, he ain't playing. And one day, I was in my room, and for 2 weeks, I had this thought. I'd wake up about 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning with this thought of, I'm going to have to forgive that person who did all those things to me. Ooh, that's not what I wanted to do, and I didn't know how to do it. But, you know, it's really impossible. My whole life I wanted to be like Jesus, but it's really impossible to be like Jesus and if I don't do what he did. So Jesus, pretty much, it's pretty common sense. The Bible is so weak, we complicate it so much, but it's like, you want what I got, you're going to have to do what I did. The people, as he's sitting on the cross, he forgave them. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. Pretty sure that the nails and the scar on his side and thirsting to death were a little bit more than what I had going on. But I was thirsty too. So I woke up one night. Next morning I went into the sanctuary and I wrote a letter. So you should see what happens, and this is only something the Holy Spirit can do. He can only take your shoes off and put you in another person's shoes and tie them and see from their point of view. What if it had happened to him? What if it happened to him? Never thought about it that way. So I wrote this letter. And went in there in the sanctuary and still scared for some reason, but I found me a stamp and I put it in the mailbox and I watched that post truck go. And I even thought about chasing him down. But it was too late. Nothing really happened. But I really believe to this day that when he opened that letter, God opened me. Something fell out. You see, the Bible talks about so many times we are vessels. That's a literal sense, vessels in the Hebrew. Vessels. If you've got a whole bunch of rocks inside a jar, you can only hold so much water. If you have so much junk in your life and resentments and bitterness and things you're holding on to and your ideas and everything that's going on and you have it in this jar, you can only fit so much God. And he had to remove some rocks out of my life. But I had nothing left. I was empty. After that point, though, he completely filled me. He filled me with supernatural doors starting to open. He started to do things, putting people in my life that I think about it now and it's just too much to even think. But more than anything, joy. Joy, happiness, freedom. No fear, no anxiety. My daddy is God. What are you going to do? What are you going to do to me now, Satan? I tell Satan all the time, what are you going to do to me that I hadn't already done to myself?
That's a cool thing about a testimony.
When you've gone down so far, the only way you have to look up, what are you going to do? But I want you to know that it was the feeling, the spirit that was in this building that gave me that feeling that I knew it was God. You see, when I told you I was a kid, now I learned how to play guitar here. One of my, Mr. Billy, he has burned in my mind, even at the darkest times. He probably doesn't even know, but some of the words he said, some of the time he took, some of the times in the basement, sometimes I would remember some of those things. And I remember this church. And you know, I've been working in Dalton, and I hadn't told Ms. Collins this, but I'm like, I feel like I'm going to see somebody from Chatsworth. I just guarantee you. Somebody, if my life is going like the shack, we're going to Chatsworth somehow, some way. Sure enough, here she comes looking for an ornament. And but that what I felt here when I was a kid, I told you I was in my basement. I didn't have anybody to talk to in the church. We should have people to talk to in the church about our deepest, darkest things. We didn't talk about problems in church. Didn't talk to my dad about it. I felt like Dad was up here. Yeah, I was his son, but I still felt like he was the preacher. I didn't know anybody else had any problems. Why would I tell you my problems if you don't tell me yours? You crazy? You use it against me. Why are you smiling? You up something? You know, that was my mentality. And that's exactly what God wants. What I was saying is down in that basement, and I felt that peace playing guitar. I didn't know what it was, but that's the reason I kept going down the basement. That's why I kept playing and perfecting it, and I would just play, and I'd play, and I'd play, and for years I played. Later, when I'm sitting there at Providence, I locked myself in the sanctuary, and I had told people, said, man, you're supposed to be a worship leader. I'm like, I don't think you know my past. And they kept telling me, have you seen the disciples? And so it sparked in my mind. I went in the sanctuary. I played for 2 hours. And I just said, all right, God, if this is what you want me to do, you're going to have to show me how to do it. Because I don't know anything about it. And didn't feel anything for 2 hours. And I was going to put up my guitar. And I promise you, I felt like Jesus had walked in the back doors and came and sat on the front pew. And the words that came out, the music that came out, was unreal. But what I realized more than anything was the same presence that was sitting right there in front of me in the sanctuary was the same presence that was with me in the basement as a kid. God had never left me. He had never failed me. He had never forsaken me. He was always there for me.
He, you know what?
He also taught me that sometimes he wishes he could take back free will, because he was crying in that room when those things were happening to me. You think he liked that? Absolutely not. You think it infuriated him? You better believe it. God's wanting to do some healing here in this room. God wants to do some physical healing. God not only wants to do that, he wants to do emotional healing, spiritual healing. Y'all know y'all have one of the best facilities in this town. You should be tearing the roof off this place. Don't forget the potency of your ministry. Now, what if there was not that potency when I was a kid? What would happen? Because now Jamie and I are traveling the country, going to different places. You know, our ministry last in Chattanooga 3 weeks ago, we counted just under 800 people at the altar. What if? Who's coming in here? Who's coming in here and not feeling the potency? Who's not coming in here? Who's supposed to be here? We get so... It's hard to do sometimes, but we get so consumed on our own lives with it. We forget about what's going on around us. And God's trying to teach these lessons. He's trying to show what you got going here. He's trying to show this place has an anointment on it. This place has an anointment on it. I'm telling you. So we're just going to play a song. If you want any prayer or anything, Miss Collins, be glad to pray. Can I get you up here? Yeah. We actually have given Miss Collins some of the oil that's been seeping out of this Bible for the past 21 months for y'all to have. And let me tell you something, it's not about the oil. But God is ready to breathe. He's ready to breathe in your life. He's not concerned with what church you're in, what denomination you're in, what religion you're at, what politics you're in, Republican, Democrat. He don't care. We did that. What he cares about is his people. He's ready to tear down some walls. He's ready for more than just an hour on Sunday and Wednesday. And y'all feel free. If you want any prayer, we have this call.
If you'd like to come and pray for someone who isn't here, pray for their salvation or for their healing, that if you'd like to stand in for them,